You're listening to the Monday Front Page, 94.7 The Pulse in Geelong. On the line, one of our regulars. She is a conflict strategist, and that's what we're going to talk about again this morning because there's a bit more floating around in the world. Sarah Blake, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Excellent. Good to have you back. It's an interesting time, and you've travelled across the ditch to talk to other people in your skill set, I suppose, about different things going on to maybe improve your own skills or share your knowledge, whatever the case may be. How did the trip go?
Look, I love Wellington. It's my third time being over there, and it was amazing. It was really interesting to catch up with colleagues whom I haven't seen probably for about 5 years. I think in the middle of it, COVID happened since our last conference, and it was a great experience to catch up with people.
Did you share new ideas, learn new skills yourself, or did you take great joy in maybe helping someone out with something that you've learned and been able to share?
A bit of column A, a bit of column B. I did two presentations over there. I did one on with my Yolngu counterpart from Arnhem Land, Bettina Dangbar, who's an Aboriginal Police Liaison Officer, and we talked about culture and grounding and what are the things that help you stay resilient. In the face of dealing with conflict, it's hard work. It's hard work walking in this space. So that was a really great piece to honour her and also to share our learnings.
It's an interesting comment you made there, because we've heard some conversation around The Voice about what's happened in New Zealand as far as the connection with the Indigenous culture over there. They seem to be well advanced and have been for many, many years. Yeah. Did that sort of come up in conversation with the locals over there about what we're going through here with The Voice?
Oh, man, The Voice and the big debate was a big part of the conversation over there. Do you know what really struck me? We started the conference with a welcome from Māori, and it was moving, deeply, deeply moving, and for everyone. And then because we had quite a contingent of women from Arnhem Land, they also got up and did a reciprocal welcome and thank you for having us. And they did some in language, and then they invited the conference, most of whom were Aussies, to sing We Are One. And it was just so moving to see culture front and centre and not be like a tick in the box thing. And it really set a tone for great deep conversations.
That's very good, and the word coming back, and it could be false because there's a lot of falsities going on at the moment, which is quite frustrating. The fact that a lot of the New Zealand people are quite shocked that we're at this stage now, when they've been comfortably blending in with the original Indigenous folk and have it all in enshrined in their parliamentary system. Did that come up in conversation a bit?
Yeah, look, I think there was this sense of, why aren't you just doing it? Like, just get on with it. And not to diminish that there are challenges over there, and there are still pockets and lots of confusion and disadvantage, but, of course, why aren't you doing this as a step forward? And, you know, I think that's The Voice isn't going to fix everything and make it perfect, but it's one step into that direction of something better and a more holistic society.
And I apologise to you, Sarah, but take the opportunity for listeners. Last week we had someone on talking about the positivity of the Yes campaign, and it is my intention to find someone for balance to come in and talk about the positivity of the No campaign. But at this stage, I'm just struggling to find that person, but we're going to get them. I've got other contacts, so just for balance, that will happen in the next week or so. So the bring home for you, Sarah, from the conference to take into your own role back here in Australia, did you have a big tick moment that you were thinking about flying back on the plane thinking, wow, that was worth it?
Oh, look, a couple of things stood out for me. A dear colleague of mine from Adelaide talked about emotions and the impact of emotions on all of us in conflict, so that was fantastic. And another colleague did a great presentation with an actor and got us up moving. And that was a really good reminder around the physicality of us shifting conflict so that we don't stay in this really negative space. So there were a couple of things. And I think, too, the industry is facing some challenges. I think that lots of people are learning about the benefits of conflict management skills, and I think that is fantastic. And I think mediators are trying to struggle with where do I fit in and how do I best help people in conflict. So I suspect that the industry as a whole will face some changes over the coming years.
I was quite shocked, stunned and embarrassed a little while ago to find out that modern slavery is still very much a part of our society, and I noticed in some notes from the conference that has popped up as well. It's almost shameful to consider that that still happens in the world we live in today.
Yeah, look, a colleague and I did a paper on this topic in relation to remediation. So there's legislation in Australia now that holds companies accountable to ensuring that there's not modern slavery in their supply chain and reporting on it, and if it's identified, to make it better. So remediation is the word we use to refer to making things right. And I am much like you. I hadn't really thought about it because it didn't seem to directly impact me. And it wasn't until my colleague and I started talking and that you just realise the depth of this. People that come out to do farming work and their passports are taken off them. Cleaners that come out to universities and aren't provided any rights. People who pick up the trolleys in the shopping markets, shopping centres. You know, are they given choice? Are they getting paid properly? This actually impacts our daily lives.
Yeah, it does, and it was quite shameful to think that, you know, most of my life has been centred around the agricultural industry, and to find that in Australia, seasonal workers are an issue, and we know a lot of those roles are done by international visitation, but the fact that that is being exploited still in 2023 is just nothing short of shameful, and we have a structure that allows it to happen. There's not enough policing of that. It truly is a sad, sad state, and we need to work hard to stamp it out.
Yeah, we do. Look, I had a really interesting conversation with my 11-year-old yesterday, actually. And he said, "Mum, what's that shine?" It's a clothing company. And you may have seen an ABC report come out not too long ago about potential risk of those type of labels and modern slavery. And we all have a choice, particularly those that buy fashion labels at a really cheap price or imitation, that we're actually supporting modern slavery when we use those websites. And you know, I get it. Money's tight. We want to get cheaper clothing. But at what cost? The cost of another human being. I don't think that's okay.
No, it's not okay. We might talk more about that the next time you come in, because I was quite intrigued to see that, because as I said, we've touched on it. We need to go deeper on it, because it's something that we just think about that happens elsewhere in the world. But to think that it's happening here is terrible. Now, while you were sitting on that plane, interestingly, was it a Qantas one? And that is a brand that that we proudly stood by many years in this country, literally proudly, because it was an internationally recognised aviation company that started in this land. And at the moment, that brand is anything but something you'd be proud of. What's going on there for someone who's in the world of mediation?
Look, I think it's complex, big commercial businesses and personalities making choices for what they prioritise in their business. So obviously making money has been a big part of Qantas's endeavours over the last few years, at the cost of, we know, workers on the front line, at the cost of us as users of the product, you know, just trying to access frequent flyer points and, you know, selling of flights that aren't going to take off. I think that there's a real disconnect between the expectations of the public and those that are making the decisions. But it's very tough because we also don't have a lot of choice. There's not the competition that's fueling better service delivery.
And, of course, on top of that now, there will be another week of headlines around that exact thing, competition, because competition was put forward and our government has allegedly said, no, we will not have that competition. Qantas can continue to have free rein. That is the claims, that is the charge against that decision, but government desperately trying to defend that decision. Yes. That looks messy as well, Sarah Blake, and I think we're going to see a lot of that during the week.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how this all unfolds, and nothing will change until the public start prioritising and speaking out and saying, hey, this is not okay. We expect better. We want better. And it's really hard when we're self-interested in maintaining the system too. You know, there's a lot of people that get a lot of benefit from it. So, yeah, I think it's a hard one, and I hope some common sense comes into the game.
Sarah, let's change tack. Something that popped up yesterday when we were conversing via the airwaves. The relationship we've developed, we still haven't met. I feel like a friend with the conversations we've had, but you just filled me with joy and pride yesterday when I read an article relevant to your personal life as a mother with a child who's not in normal educational function, and there's challenges there. And you as a mother have been through some pretty tricky times to find a good outcome. But it's a really good way to just stop and have a look at our own education system through your experiences.
Yeah, look, I wrestled with, do I share a personal story about our family? And the reason why I decided to is because I keep getting asked by people about it. And in my friend group, they said, oh, you need to share this, that's my story too. I think for me, our son isn't diagnosed, and it's not because we haven't had him assessed, but at this stage, they've decided he isn't diagnosed with anything. But we've had enormous challenges with the school system. And so our story has been really around whether we could have a partnership with the school and our child. So not an attack on teachers, but is the system or the culture around the school that we were at able to help him thrive, help him meet his full potential? And after probably a good hard 2 years of trying to work with the school, my son was coming home with devastating stories around they wouldn't let me go to the toilet and I hate myself. And, you know, he's in year one and it's devastating.
So we're talking about a 6 or 7 year old child?
Yeah, we are. He was five at that time. And that's devastating. And for us, you know, we really tried to be rational in working with the school, and that's hard when we care so much about our kids and you know, try to say, hey, what's going on? Try to understand the whole picture, because I think sometimes they seek to label our kids as bad kids or difficult kids, and that gives them an excuse of not caring for them anymore. Plus, they had 30-plus kids in a school classroom in a tiny room. Do you know, like, it's not fair. And we pulled him out and started at our local public school this year, and it's just been the most beautiful experience for him and for us as parents, watching him thrive with a teacher, watching him. He started the year probably almost a year behind the other kids, and this year, 2 weeks ago, he got taken off his learning development plan, and he's thriving. And I guess I want to say that that I hear so many parents with similar stories. And we need to be able to find a way to work with our education system. As parents, we're trying our best, and I know many teachers are as well, but something's broken when we can't support our kids to thrive.
Yeah, it's really, there's a lot to unpack in all this, and I know your own circumstances with you running a successful business. You're a very busy person. Your husband is away with the Navy at times, so your parenting challenges are strong anyway, and to put something like this in above it, because I guess you subconsciously lean a lot on the education system to support your children and your parenting. I don't want to use the word deficiencies, but the reality is that you're busy, your husband's away, it's a tough gig anyway. So to have this other problem that the education system can't meet, it must be really challenging as a parent.
Yeah, look, and I think too, education is not my area of expertise. I've got a lot of experience. My mum was a teacher, but we rely on our teachers to give us informed advice. And when there is a feeling in your gut that something's not quite right, you start to second guess yourself and say, hey, am I being stupid here? Am I being a difficult parent? And you're often made to feel like it's not okay to ask questions. So I think that there is a sense that how do we do this together? How do we make it okay for parents to ask these questions of teachers without teachers getting defensive, but also without parents going in and attacking teachers? You know, I think my skills as a conflict strategist were invaluable. How others do it without that skill set, because it's so tricky.
Yeah, that's a really tough gig. That's the thing I was thinking of most about having the time to go in, and the constructive conversation I'm sure would have taken place, but you've got to also have that with the right people and get the right response as well. So I imagine a lot of parents who maybe don't have your skills but have your frustrations may not have had a similar conversation, and there potentially the conflict has actually increased.
Absolutely, and unfortunately who ends up suffering? Always the child. It's always the child that ends up bearing the brunt from the inability of the parents and teachers to work together.
Yeah, it's a really difficult one. It sounds like you've got through at this stage, but I suppose it's something that's constantly monitored. But at least if your child is in a safe and happy place, that makes it so much easier for you to do what needs to be done, and of course engage them with the school who are giving you now positive stories.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, also being open that he's not always easy. You know, he can be very difficult, but we're all on the same page and we're all sharing ideas and we're all sharing support for each other. And I think that's what matters.
Sarah, thank you so much again for your informativeness, but in this particular case, your honesty and openness on a tricky subject. And I'm sure there's listeners to the show this morning will be resonating with exactly what you're saying, because it's a pretty tough time. The education system we know is underfunded, certainly in the public sector, underfunded, under-resourced, and there will be a lot of parents having these same problems with their child or children. Yeah. And it's a tough gig, but if they can get something from this, it's very good. So we will touch on it some more as you progress, because I think it's a really interesting subject.
My absolute pleasure. Good luck to all the parents out there.
Thank you, Sarah Blake. I really appreciate your help again.